Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, emotion worker, and social critic. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Hello, Elizabeth. How are you doing today? I usually say we invite your calls, but...
Yeah, we're doing a different thing today, aren't we?
We sure are.
We're changing it up a little bit to adjust the schedule, so we won't be taking live calls today. We're going to have a kind of in-studio conversation with a couple of my girlfriends who have come by, so it's going to be a conversation with a reluctant therapist and her girlfriends and Brian.
Thank you.
Which I'm really excited to do because I have wanted to, one, have my girlfriends in to be on the air to kind of make this feel more like a community of people that are concerned about mental health and each other and how we can build a community of support. You know, that person-to-person charity that we've been talking about the last few weeks. How do we connect need and knowledge and bring people together who have skills and time and want to be of help with the people who don't always have access, easy access to the resources that are available? So in this effort to build more community today, we won't be taking live calls, but we will encourage your emails, as always, to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, or you can join us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, and get in on the conversation that way. We always love to hear from you and kind of move this discussion forward into the greater community. So Brian, what's on your mind this week? What's been going on?
Well, this week... not much besides my baby got his first shots yesterday.
Aww.
Yeah.
Everybody.
He had four shots within a couple minutes. And he did really well, actually.
I know it's usually worse for the parents.
Right.
Because we feel cruel. Well, you have now hit another milestone in the process of becoming the wonderful dad that you are.
Yeah, thanks.
And I'd also like to welcome my girlfriends, Terry Kerchewski.
Hello.
Hi, and Jennifer Blomfield.
Hello.
Welcome
nice to
the
be
conversation
here
with a reluctant therapist. So today I thought we would talk about the healing arts and how arts play such a huge role in our lives, each of us individually, but also as a community. The arts in San Luis Obispo County, Monterey County, Santa Barbara County. We are really blessed with a lot of phenomenal arts opportunities and programs. And Brian's very involved in the arts himself. He's a musician. And so I thought we would talk about our own personal experience with art and how it's changed and impacted our lives, and also talk about some of the opportunities that might be out there for people to get involved with the arts themselves or for their children who might not have easy access in their regular routine. So that's kind of the conversation about arts today. You know, my personal background is I never really consider myself an artist. I'm one of those people who says, I'm not really artistic, but I know what I like. I love music and I've always been very involved with music and I love singing, but then I had a child that was a much better singer, so I thought I can like it from afar. I did a lot of theater when I was young, so I loved the arts, but I never felt it was my gift. But I like being around people of creative artist energy. And it's interesting because my husband, Chris, is very gifted with his hands and great at making things and building things and is very creative. And so we have this interesting symbiotic experience together where if I come up with an idea, he can usually make it happen. So I think my creative outlet has been putting together a house or projects my husband and I have done. I said, honey, can you build this? This would be great. And he makes it happen. And then I get to see my creative vision come to life. So I kind of have this mutual dance experience with art. And Terry,
yes.
So I know you are involved in art in a lot of ways in your life, but first tell everyone a little bit about why I know you and what you do when you're not creating art.
Okay. I am the director of the Child Development Resource Center, and we actually met. It's a therapeutic program, mm-hmm. and I came in 2008 to direct executively, and you were a therapist there.
Yes,
and
I was.
We connected right away on many levels and have been friends ever since. I originally got into working with children when I lived in the Bay Area in Oakland. And even though arts have been a peripheral part of my life for most all of my life, I really was engaged with the social justice aspect of helping children to heal and families to heal, so that then if they chose, you know, like you said, it might not be my gift, but if that was their gift, then that was definitely a way that I could front load a little bit to the family or the child to be successful in whatever their gift was, science, art, math, you know, athletics, whatever. And so that's how I became engaged with schools and children. And since then, we've opened the Smart Studio, which is a program of the Child Development Resource Center, and it's a recycled art studio. And it's just been a wonderful way to have to continue some of that healing and outlet, but also to engage families that are not yet quite in the crisis to help address some of their creative needs and outlets. So,
and so tell everyone who doesn't know a little bit more about, you know, the Smart Studio is a recycled art studio, but how, you know, do people come and make things, or how does it work?
Yeah, it is a community program is what we call it, because it is for artists of all ages, 4 to 104. Mm-hmm. And people come all the time, for different reasons. They come in to maybe just purchase art supplies. We have a fair amount of actual artists and maybe Cal Poly students who come, or teachers who want to purchase the materials. But the vast majority of people stay and actually create the art. We have paint and glue and scissors and all of that for them. And sometimes it's families together. I do have classes for children. One of my big events is a ladies' night, so that the ladies can actually get together and do something meaningful and in building community. And we're just opening also because one of the things that I've heard over the last 6 months since we've been open is that there are a lot of people who are really reserved and timid about engaging in the creative process. They really, really want to, and they feel like it's inside them, but they feel they lack the technical skill. And so we've got a program starting up this summer called Art Therapy for kind of my reluctant artists.
Oh, there we go. It goes hand in hand with this conversation with a reluctant therapist, which you're listening to today. As I mentioned earlier, we're not going to be taking calls because we're having a conversation in studio with a reluctant therapist and her girlfriends and Brian. But you can always join us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. We'd love to hear from you. And so we've been speaking to my friend Terry Krucheski from the Child Development Resource Center and the Smart Studio, which is located in San Luis Obispo. And my other girlfriend here today is Jennifer Blomfield. Hey, Jennifer.
Hey, how are you? So nice to be here.
I'm so glad you came in. Now, this is way out of Jennifer's comfort zone, so we have to say up front, for my friend here who has spent most of your life performing as an artist, coming on the air is a huge labor of love just for me, and so I appreciate you doing that.
This is a huge labor of love.
She's easy to love.
I'm pretty sure that I'd rather have a colonoscopy than be on live radio. But having said that, I am in the company of two beautiful women that I admire very much in their field, and I do feel comfortable here having my slow roasted coffee. Thank you, Brian.
You're very welcome.
Here in the studio, and love to share anything that you or your viewers would like to hear.
Would be my listeners. I can view you.
All right. Any
listeners? But tell everyone first how you came to be an artist and what the arts are in your life, because you have a great history of performing and being in the arts.
Well, I think, and I tell my students and their parents, you know, I teach at Mission College Prep High School, and I work with very, very bright young men and women. And so sometimes people are afraid to have their kids in the theater because, well, how could they make a living? And I always say, they don't have a choice. When you are talented and gifted, you will go in that direction without choice because it is your destiny and it is your talent. You can also be a doctor and a lawyer and still be that. But I also tell my students, maybe not go to college for theater because you already do it well. But those that do it in college, it's because they don't have a choice. That's how much they love it.
Right. You're driven to
the It is
arts.
Just in every part of your body. And I was that way as a child, very, very early on. The first thing my mother said was that I came out of the womb twirling. All I wanted to do was dance and spin and twirl. Very early on in my childhood, I got involved in community theater, went on to get a college degree in musical theater, and then had a very nice 10-year career as a nightclub singer touring around the country. And then I found myself on a small island with three children. And I
in Alaska.
Yes, Kodiak, Alaska, which I'm going back to in a couple weeks. And then ended up here in San Luis Obispo and had a children's theater, the Slow Children's Theater at Unity. And now I am at Mission College Prep as their drama teacher, and I also work as a counselor in the schools doing art therapy with children.
So there wasn't enough on your plate. You went back and also got your master's degree to work as a counselor, which is huge. And it's also very creative. And I guess that would be what I consider my creative outlet, is doing therapy and being a therapist and, you know, working in, we call it the art of psychotherapy. So I think there's a lot to being creative and working with others where they're stuck or where they're hurting and helping them to find creative ways to heal, which is why I think I'm so passionate about the arts therapy piece, not only for reluctant artists, but also for helping children come out of their shell or to feel good about who they are. When you talk about the children's theater, that's actually how we met, that my youngest daughter auditioned for you when she was 7, and she's now 16.
One of my favorite stories, because I don't run professional auditions. I don't ever want a child to feel nervous or that they're not good enough. So I keep my auditions very, very low key. And as an example, when Elizabeth was there, she was sitting next to me, and she did not know I was the director.
We'd never met.
Slow Children's Theater, and this little girl, beautiful little blonde, toe-headed girl, gets on stage, and she goes, "That's my daughter." And so she sings, and I look over to Elizabeth, and I say, "Did you have any idea she sang that well?" And, of course, Elizabeth didn't. She had never heard her sing. And now, of course, we're talking about Kelly Fiona Barrett, who is a phenomenal talent.
Oh, you can come on my show anytime.
And she just finished Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes.
At Kelrick, and auditioning for many more shows this summer. And a total example of what I was saying about you don't have a choice. This is in her DNA to perform. But I also know that she is not going to get her college degree in theater or musical theater, that she is probably going to be a great environmentalist and working with, you can talk about your own daughter.
Well, we'll see where she goes. But I think that's the other piece, is that we feel like we have to compartmentalize our lives sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, that we're either artists or we're scientists or we're athletes. And I think that compartmentalizing of our lives really makes our experiences feel very narrow. And I think from the pace of our life, or, you know, the expectations academically on our children, we start having to feel give things up, and then we don't have time for art. And if we don't have art in the schools, then how are we going to get art into our children's lives? And, you know, if there aren't children's theater programs in the community, then how do you expose your children to being able to get up on stage and build that confidence? Or if there isn't arts in schools, then we need a place like the Smart Studio. And for Brian, how were you introduced to music? You know, how did that come to you? Because I know, and you might be a gifted artist in other realms, and I don't even know.
I might be too, and not even know it. music is—it's like Jennifer saying, it's in my DNA. My both sides of my family, tons of musicians, and grew up hearing and watching people play instruments at every time the family was together. And then I got my chance to pick out my first instrument and just never turned back.
And you chose?
I chose clarinet, and then hated it and went to bass clarinet. And then I started guitar and hated it and picked bass guitar. And now I'm basically playing upright bass in symphonies and jazz bands.
Oh, cool.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And I didn't have a choice. I ended up getting full scholarship to go get my college degree in performance.
That's great.
Yeah.
So impressive. I am feeling that there is going to be some upright bass on the air with us one of these days.
Maybe.
You're going to go in and out of our breaks with the upright bass.
That sounds good.
I'm feeling it. So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're doing something special this week. We're having an in-studio conversation with my girlfriends Terry Kurchevsky and Jennifer Blomfield, and Brian, as always. And we're not taking any phone calls on the air because we're going to just kind of keep it in-house. But we do welcome your feedback on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or by email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, and we'll be back to talk about the healing arts and therapy. Yeah. Welcome back to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, joined by my lady friends, Terry Kerchevsky and Jennifer Blomfield. We're talking about the healing arts and arts in our lives and how art came to us. Jennifer was talking about how you can't ignore the arts. If art lives inside of you, if you feel the heart of an artist, it just has to be there. Brian feels it with his music. And I know, Terry, you're married to a musician, so art in the music form is in your life all the time.
Absolutely. And I'm a writer. A lot of people don't know that about me.
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited. Tell me what.
No, poetry and short stories, but I haven't been writing. And since I opened the studio, I've been writing a lot more.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah. So
it got your creative juices flowing.
Oh, absolutely. Just being around inspirational people has been really, I want to say therapeutic, but this is probably not the right, like, I mean it in a very just healing, inspirational way.
Well, and it's interesting that you hesitate to say therapeutic, because I think when we talk about things that are therapeutic, we feel like we have to be in a room with an expert.
On the couch,
exactly, right? That vision that we have of what therapy is. But kind of the focus of this show all the time is that mental health is very much in our control, that we can care for and tend to our mental health like we do our physical health through exercise. And the arts are absolutely a way that we tend to our mental health and well-being. That there's a lot of research that shows that the healing arts actually have therapeutic benefits, and we can experience the therapeutic benefits without being in the realm of, you know, a licensed professional, that we can bring therapeutic benefits into our life in a lot of ways. Just like we found that meditation, you know, reduces blood pressure and anxiety and can really have therapeutic benefits, and we don't need to be in an expert's room to have that happen. So it's interesting, a couple things I read about the healing arts. When we talk about the healing arts, there is a field of therapy, or a kind of a specialized part of therapy, and Jennifer is going to talk about her experience in it. We're doing drama and play therapy and dance therapy and music therapy, different art therapies with children to help them work through emotions and feelings that they're having that they can't verbalize. Because, and both of you being experts in the field of children, know that, you know, children show us much more of their inner world than they can tell us. And so we found that arts therapy really is beneficial. But some of the research, and that's part of my heartache, is that we don't give anything any validation anymore in our culture unless it has scientific research to back it up. But the nice thing is, when it comes to almost all parts of therapy or psychotherapy, all of the research that they're doing for the last 10 years has actually just proven that the wonderful talk therapy we'd been doing for the last 50 years was the most beneficial in long-term mental health and well-being. That although there are places for medication in people's lives that's necessary, in the long-term benefit of people's lives, that the good old-fashioned talk therapy with a trained professional who allows you to talk about your experiences and feel your feelings has the greatest long-term impact. And so that excites me, that the research is proving that what we've been doing is phenomenal. Some of the research has also shown that art therapy enhances the psychosocial treatment of cancer. It actually helps to decrease symptoms of distress, improve quality of life and perceptions of body image, and reduction of pain perception. So by participating in artistic programs, it can really help with cancer therapies. Research with children with cancer, it indicates that engaging in drawing and painting is effective method for dealing with pain and other disturbing symptoms of illness for the children. And also for children with asthma, art therapy has shown to reduce anxiety and improve feelings of quality of life and strengthen their sense of well-being. I think asthma quite often is triggered by stress and anxiety, and so the art therapy seems to reduce those. So I love that we're actually finding overall that our mental health and well-being is helped and enhanced by participating in art, whether or not we're good at art, right?
Right. Can I mention one thing? I read an article yesterday as well about a school in Roxbury, which is kind of the rough side of Boston. And when the new principal came in, he was like, you know, sixth out of six in a row kind of thing. And it was the last ditch effort. The principal walked in and fired the security guards and hired art teachers with the money.
Oh, wow.
And now, although I wish I could say, oh, it's like the highest performing school in the country, you know, because that's not going to happen in 2 years. they've made like the biggest gains in the state, and the kids, the discipline problems are really minor, and it's a middle school, by the way, so that's also a really tough age to have a program to be administrator of. So I think in all ways, just personal, social, educational, art has so many benefits that I think research is showing time and time again, even recently.
Well, and I guess the frustration I have, and you and I've talked about this, and Jennifer and I have talked about this, is that even though we already know the benefits, if we were able to open the phone lines, we'd be flooded with calls of people talking about the benefits of art therapy, but it's moving the bureaucratic ship to come around, which is so slow and painful. And I just think of all the kids that are missing out as we slowly turn back towards recognizing, oh, wow, that was a mistake. We shouldn't have eliminated arts. So what do we do, for the children right now until we are able to have Roxbury programs in all the schools again? What can we do as a community? And Jennifer, I was hoping you'd talk a little bit about I think you do phenomenal work in the schools with art therapy.
Well, before I start that, what you said about the arts programs being cut, what's being cut is free therapy.
That's
it's
true.
It's free. And it used to be in our schools every day. Mm-hmm. And the children are able to release all sorts of things, anxiety, depression, free-floating anxiety that from pressure of tests when they
Absolutely.
Are in music class or in art class or in theater. So what's happening now, as those things have been cut, and PE as well, mm-hmm. Where kids could run. Kids are supposed to run. They're not supposed to march or walk slowly. They're supposed to run. So in the schools that I work at through the SAFE program, we do sand tray. We do clay therapy. We do drawing. And we do talk. We're not really doing clinical therapy mm-hmm. because that's referred out. But what we do is highly therapeutic. I do a lot of work with clay, and the kids are able to build power animals, or they'll write all of their worries on a clay ball, and then we show them how to disguise the words. I call it lacing. So we spin circles around the letters, so nobody can read what the word was, but they know. And then we color it, and then varnish it, and when they spin it, it is the most beautiful top. And the kids love their worry balls. And then at the end of the school year, we build a little caterpillar head. And so all of their worry balls is the caterpillar's body. And so they have this beautiful piece of art that they take home. But it has held all their feelings and helped them release those feelings. And so many of them still, after 3 years, they come back and go, oh, yeah, I pull out my worry balls and spin them. And these are real simple, simple things you can do with children. And really, you would just do it as a mom having fun with your kids.
And I think you bring up a good point, and this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist and my girlfriends Terry Kraczewski and Jennifer Blomfield, and Brian is here with us today. We aren't taking any live calls today because we're doing an in-studio conversation about the healing arts and how they can impact all of us, young and old alike. And Jennifer was talking about her experience working with children therapeutically with clay and different art, and you also talk about running the kids before you bring them in to do their time with you, because it helps them to calm. I mean, I think the important piece for me, the takeaway, is, again, wanting to connect need and knowledge. And we get a lot of phone calls from moms saying, well, I'm home with my kids, but they need more outlets. And what you're saying is get a lump of clay or get the art materials out and just let the children go wherever the art takes them, making whatever mess it is with sand and water or clay, because we do need to release emotions. Children and adults, the way that we move through the normal emotions of life, right? Because all of us feel anxiety at times. All of us feel depression at times. All of us feel nervous about something that's going on. And for our kids, there's a lot of stress and pressure every day, negotiating the social life of school and negotiating the tests. So we need to be able to off gas, I don't know the other term to use, the emotions that build up inside of us, right? At the end of the day, we have to be able to take off the feelings. Because when we get stuck, it's because we've had so much stress pile up. We've had too many emotions get inside of us and we haven't released them. And it builds up to a point where we feel chronically anxious or chronically depressed. And so being able to work those emotions through us and out of us, like running very hard, helps the body to do its own natural healing. So not to take away your thunder, but I think part of what you're saying is it doesn't have to be with me in the classroom doing clay with the kids, that this can be done at home.
Well, I can share some personal therapeutic stories 20 years before I even went and got my master's. In 1993, my husband died in a fishing accident in Alaska, and I had three little girls. And so a lot of the work and the healing that was done was not just through my dance school that I had where they danced, but a lot was done at home with paper and crayons. Mm-hmm. And they would just draw pictures. My youngest was in kindergarten, and the school teacher called and said, well, it's open house, and we don't want to display your daughter's artwork because of the nature of it. And the drawing at school was someone going underwater to a treasure box. And what will they find in that treasure box? And so it showed a picture of the treasure box underwater and a deep sea diver. Well, my daughter drew a picture of her dead father, and she drew lots of fish. And the deep sea diver had a knife. And the deep sea diver was there to protect her father and from the sharks, but the little fish were allowed to stay. Now, the dead body in this photograph, or in this drawing, had the biggest happy face smile because this body was being protected. That is therapy.
Yes.
And nobody sent her to a therapist. She did that all on her own. The teachers were so excited because they knew it was therapy, but they figured it might not be appropriate for open
for
house.
Open house.
But the fact that everyone embraced that and they knew that this child was working through her issues. Another one of my favorite stories of my three little girls was 3 years after their father's death, I started dating. Well, that was not a good time for them. They did not want their mother with another man. So my daughter said to me, I have a math test tomorrow, and I know I can't take the math test because I'm going to be thinking of you and so-and-so. And I said, well, let's draw a picture of it. Well, before the evening was over, she had drawn four pictures of guys that she didn't like. And in each picture, I said, well, what would you say to those guys? And she had a lot to say to them. And in the last picture, she drew a picture of me and her father. And we were in bed. And I said, and what would you like to say to your father? Bravo, Dad, for making me and my two sisters. Good job. So it ended with anxiety. I mean, it started with anxiety, and it ended with this beautiful feeling of love and being loved. So the next day I said, how'd you do on your math test? Oh, it was fine. I got an A. And that's the other thing with children and resiliency. She didn't need to talk about the night before and the anxiety. She was already moving on.
She was done.
She got a good grade on her test. She didn't need to talk about it. But when they need to talk about it, you need to help them talk about it. And if they can't do it with words, get the artwork out. As you know, yeah, you probably do this in your work, Terry. And
well, no, I think you made an important point, too, about really interacting with the art. It kind of makes me sad that the teachers, even though I can see where they were coming from, not wanting to put your daughter's artwork out for the rest of the school. However,
absolutely,
I think that we don't, as a culture, engage very much in talking about art, and especially with some of the new art that is being produced right now, that's exactly what it's for. It's about discussing it and how it makes you feel and how you react to it and why. And I think that that is something, I know there's a lot of moms at home who could use a lump of clay or a buttons or an egg carton to help work with their children and help engage in their creativity and such. But I really think it's that additional conversation of, wow, how does this make you feel, or what do you think about that, or why are you thinking that way, that really brings it out of a person. But it also values, then it puts the value back on the artist and the art as well, instead of we're doing this because we're supposed to, or this is, you know, we're doing this to learn. It's really about engaging with the process, which I don't know that a lot of moms are really comfortable. I don't know that a lot of people are calm enough to sit back and say, I'm just going to sit and reflect on what this means to me and why, and how I can communicate it with other people. I think that that's really special, both those stories. And I wish I saw more of that, but that is something definitely that I do when we're in the studio and kids, because kids go through it all. They are looking at all the things that we have. We do more mixed media. So we have buttons and bottle caps and fabric scraps, and it's just really interesting to see how a kid engages with those materials in a way that's really meaningful to them. And so I try and probe them about, oh, and what is he doing now, and why? Just so that the child is aware that they're reflecting on it.
Yeah,
that
and they're asking them, tell me about themselves. The story of this picture, and they'll tell you. And it's remarkable where their minds go and where they are in their subconscious, it all comes out in the drawing.
But I just think what an opportunity that would have been for another little child to walk through and see your husband in the water being protected in the picture. What an opportunity for that family to discuss
for their own
differences of families and what happens and how they can rally as a community around you and your family. You know, I just think sometimes we miss the opportunities because art is about the process and not the final product.
And that's such an important point, because I think what we wanted to focus on today was about how do we bring art into our lives. We don't have to relegate therapeutic experiences to a professional's office, that we can each take care of each other's mental health, or help our children to explore their emotions and feelings healthfully, just with a few tips. And this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett with my friends Terry Kurcheski, Jennifer Blomfield, with Brian. We're having an in-studio conversation today, but we do welcome your participation on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or through an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And we'll be right back to talk more about how you can engage in art with your family and help them to receive the therapeutic benefits. Welcome back to our conversation with The Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, joined in the studio today with my girlfriends Terry Kurcheski and Jennifer Blomfield, both beautiful, talented women who have brought the arts into their lives and are also sharing the arts with our community. And I wanted to bring them in today to talk about art and how we can bring it into our lives, and how I feel sad that art is a little out of our reach sometimes, that we feel like art is for artists, and if people were trained and they're professionals, they get to do art, or art is for young children because they can be artists. But we don't allow our ourselves to experience art in our lives in many ways because we don't feel like we have time for it or it's not necessary. But as we've been talking about, it's so incredibly important to have this outlet for our emotions, that if we are going to take personal responsibility for our mental health and well-being and to tend to our mental health like we do our physical health, art and music and play and dance and theater are all essential pieces to maintaining a strong sense of mental health, to repairing the damage done by excessive stress, or if we've been through a crisis or a grief or a loss, to be able to express the emotions we have through art is a way of processing. Because I think what's happened and why so much of my work as a reluctant therapist keeps me stuck is that I'm sad that when we experience a loss or grief or death or any sort of trauma, that we believe we have to now hand ourselves over to an expert to heal. And that is not necessarily true, because every part of life has some sort of ups and downs, and we are capable as humans to heal ourselves if given the opportunity, or if we're told often enough to trust our instincts. And so I think we were talking about moms and dads and parents and grandparents who have young children in their lives, that you can really help your children to process their feelings and emotions by encouraging them to create things artistically and not just looking at it and say, oh, that's a nice picture, but to talk to them about what they've made. And you both brought up great stories about how we can engage our children, but maybe we can talk a little bit about things that the Slow Child Development Resource Center, where Terry works and where we met, and how art is used with the kids there a little bit.
Okay, yeah. There are traditional classroom programs. It's a preschool program, but we also serve clients in the therapy program up to age 18. And so there's constantly art being done, and I in therapy offices, although I don't know what's actually happening in them because mm-hmm. they're confidential.
Absolutely.
But the kids are walking out with paper. They're singing songs I can hear as I'm, you know, walking to the copier. And then the classrooms are really art rich. That was one of the things I know when I first started, we really felt like that having a lack of stimulation could calm the children. Now it is just all the classrooms are art rich. There's a jungle in a classroom and a forest in another. And the kids are creating.
So you felt that having a calm classroom didn't help children calm? Having more art helped them calm?
So there used to be not a lot of art being done. There okay. used to not be a lot of art on the walls represented. There used to not be a reflection artistically of the children in the room as much as there is now.
And before was the idea that they wanted less stimulus in
yes.
the room so the kids would be calm.
Yes.
But what you found was the opposite.
And there are and I'm a true believer in, you know, low lights and calm demeanor, mm-hmm. especially when children have difficulty regulating. They're just learning, you know, they're preschoolers. But I have found that there is a different culture to the school now that there's art all through the hallways and all in the classrooms, because it is more reflective. There's kind of an ownership over the school now from the families and the children that wasn't there before.
So the kids feel like this is their place because they see their work.
Yes, and every day it's a discussion like we were talking about. Mom and dad will pick up the three-year-old, and on the way, which is right by my office, they'll be walking in, oh, that's mine. Oh, that's Joni's. Oh, that's, you know, whoever's. And it's a way that we teach them as educators to learn their letters and colors and numbers. But to them, it's really learn through playing and self-expression. Mm-hmm. And so it helps them make great connections.
So it's building the bond between the parents. And I think, and Jennifer, tell me what your experience has been. I feel that a lot of times parents are a little afraid of the inner world of their children, that they don't want to ask what that picture meant or what they were making with the clay, because they're a little frightened themselves about what's going to come out of their child's mouth and what do they do with that information, right?
Well, children are natural sponges, and they might have seen a TV show the night before, or they spent the night with a friend and watched a movie or played a video game that you don't have at your home. If as adults, we see it in our dreams. When you're children, it comes out in play. So as a parent, you don't need to read too much into it. You just need to allow it to come out. Unless there is something that's very disturbing and you see a pattern that's being repeated. But otherwise, just letting them play, they're releasing everything. And they're coming up with natural coping skills of whatever was bothering them.
So when once they've created the art piece, children tend to let it go once they've been able to express it.
I see that a lot, not just as a mother raising children, but also with kids that I work with. Absolutely. They're much more resilient with trauma. The thing about trauma is if they through play, they rescue themselves or they rescue others, which helps feeling that they've rescued themselves. Mm-hmm. And then once they feel safe, they don't need to play that game anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, there's so many videos and stuff now that's so related to violence and guns, it's hard to tell. But it's very obvious in a clinical setting when stuff is being released and when it's resolved, because you will see how the play changes.
Well, and I guess then that's the take-home message for moms or grandparents or aunts and uncles, anyone who's working with children and, you know, seeing through their play or having them draw pictures, it might make you a little anxious. You think, oh, boy, I don't think I want to know what this meant. But to talk to them and ask them and just trust that the process of being able to tell you the story about their picture is part of the healing. And that unless you see this recurrent pattern, you know, and maybe disruption in their play or their sleep or their eating behaviors, that them telling you a story about a wild picture that they made is not necessarily an indication that there's a mental illness or a disorder, that it's really them processing and trying to make sense of their world. And I think that's the big piece of art, is how we make sense of our world is expressed through our play and our creations. And, you know, as we talked about, Jennifer has had a long history in theater, and we met through her children's theater, which had a profound impact on my child's whole life. I know the stories about it. You tell the story that you've had some experiences with children who came to you whose parents said, please, can you find a place for my child? They really need this, and how they grew from that.
Well, the wonderful thing about theater is you get to practice being someone you're not. Hmm. And by practicing someone you're not, you actually learn how to be that way. The other good thing is you can practice being someone that you wouldn't ever want to be. And that's very exciting, because those parts are a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, we would not have television or theater without conflict. If it was just a day-to-day life, it would be boring and no one would want to watch it. There has to be conflict. And life is messy, and there is conflict. So in theater, when kids play these roles, they're actually able to release those things as well, in both ways, releasing the bad parts themselves and learning how to be a different way. They can learn how to be calm. If they have to walk like a Victorian lady, it's very different than playing, you know, someone in East LA in a high school. Both parts are really fun, but they require a different sensibility. And just the modeling and the practicing is therapeutic in its own. I've had kids, you know, 20 years later write me letters saying how I changed their life. I didn't change their life. Mm. The theater changed their life. I really had no part of that. It is just the act of theater that makes people's lives richer, not just in participating, but in watching. And I had a college professor. I was very upset because I didn't like Sam Shepard plays because they were so violent. And he said, Jennifer, theater is not about making you happy all the time. Mm-hmm. Theater is making you feel all the emotions and what you do with them. And that is therapeutic.
That absolutely, and that's a great point, because I think as parents, and I hear this quite often from moms, and Terry and I have talked about this a lot, that when you say to a parent, what are your goals for your children? What is it you hope for them? They'll most often say, I want them to be happy. And you think, that's so limiting, because life isn't just about being happy. It's about all the emotions. And that I think, again, I talk about parents fearing their child being unhappy or experiencing sadness or having something traumatic happen. So we try to keep them in this bubble. But the whole process of childhood is kind of accepting and understanding and learning to cope with the messiness, as Jennifer said, that life really is, that we don't do our children any favors by trying to keep them in a happy bubble, because that's not going to sustain. And that really our work as parents is to help our children understand that life has many feelings and emotions and experiences, and that they can cope with and survive through all of them, and to give them the tools like creating art to express those feelings. What are some of the things you've seen now, the Smart Studio that Terry started 6 months ago? Mm-hmm. Tell everyone where it's located.
It's at 3591 Sacramento, number 104, over by the Marigold Center.
It's not easy to find.
No, it's not. But once you find it, you know exactly where it is. It's over when you're over by the grad, stop by. We're about a block down.
Yeah, it's in a kind of an office complex. It's a combo office and residential complex.
Yeah, live workspace.
And so what goes on a daily basis there?
Children, adults, different groups of people, teenagers will come in and they will pick stuff off of the shelves. They'll come in with an idea. They'll come in with no ideas. And they just know that they want to come in and do something. And I think I worked in tourism for a couple of years, and that thought of not having a plan, mm-hmm. of just doing something that you find pleasurable, is so scary to people. And so it takes people a lot of time to come in, unless they've got a plan, like your daughter, who just comes and starts like breaking stuff apart and gluing it together. And it's so amazing. They come in and it's a process to go through to go through kind of where their skills are and what their feelings are and where they are in their own creative process. And then by the time they sit down and actually engage with the materials, create whatever it is, a caterpillar or a picture frame, or I sometimes have to kick people out after like 2.5 hours, because that, and you said art and life is about feeling more than happy. And mm-hmm. I feel like this is one moment in time that the children, the parents, the teens, the artists who come in just feel alive.
Alive.
Yeah.
That's
just
what we want to feel.
Yeah.
That's
and
beautiful.
And so that's where we sit, is just I help them kind of figure out how I can assist them, what materials they might need or where somebody might have tried to interact with them before. But it's really about them engaging in their own like living process, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
No, I like that. I like that the goal of art is to feel alive. And we are feeling alive. I'm so excited to have my girlfriends, Terry Kurcheski and Jennifer Blomfield, here with us today. And Brian, we're doing an in-studio conversation with a reluctant therapist. So we're not taking live calls, but we are talking about the arts and how we can engage in healing ourselves through allowing our creative process to come out in some ways. And we'll be back to talk some more about art.
Thank you.
So welcome back to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, joined today by my friends Terry Kruczewski and Jennifer Blomfield, my two girlfriends. I kind of want to make this an ongoing thing where we have a week every now and then. We just come in and talk about things that are going on in the community that are important to us. And today it's about art, because both my girlfriends are fully engaged in the arts in their lives, and they've had a huge impact. And Brian, you're a musician, so I know the arts have had a huge impact on your life.
Definitely.
So tell me a time that art and music saved you.
You're talking to me here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see. There was a huge part in my life. I was with some woman dating and was, you know, a drastic breakup and thought it ruined my life. And I fell back on music. And it was, we were talking about it a couple weeks ago now when Kyle was asking what to do. And that's, I had said I'd gone out on cruise ships instead of going to college and just explored the world and let, and I was playing music doing that. And that definitely saved my life and helped me grow a lot and figure more of myself and the world out.
So where do you go when you're doing music? Where?
Sometimes I tell people it's like a video game. Like I'm putting notes and music together and listening. Like I spend more time listening to the other musicians around me than I do myself, or paying attention to what I'm doing and just trying to make one big sound with everybody going on at the same time, just trying to make it one big piece of art.
So were you the dark teen in your room with stereo up loud and headphones, or were you doing your own music?
I was doing both. I was learning heavy metal on the guitar with a stereo up loud in my bedroom, and then I was also going out and surfing with my friends and skateboarding, and it was in and playing in bands with friends too. You know,
so moving those emotions through you regularly.
Yeah, just trying to figure it all out.
Because Jennifer, you know, teaches at Mission College Prep. She does drama there, and you're talking about art and the impact it has, and how important it is for teens, because going through the adolescent years, those little death years, as we talk about it, because you're losing your childhood self and trying to discover who your young adult self will be. It's a very dark and confusing time. And so you're talking a little bit about how you see adolescents express themselves through art.
Well, as you're starting this slow process of launching into adulthood.
Very slow.
Starts about 14 and ends at 27.
Or 37.
you have to have a place to settle. And it is your job to be a little rebellious. It is your job to question everything, because that's how you're developing your own identity and how you're going to go into the world. And even though as parents, and the three of us, we set that foundation, it is our children's jobs to question everything we've done and to think we're complete idiots. So when I look at the art, we just did our big art show last week, and some of these kids' paintings, people would consider them dark, or, oh my gosh, this is so...
What's going on in their
life? Yeah, and I'm thinking, bravo, this is a way to express what you're feeling and still, you know, be accepted to Cal Poly and Berkeley. I mean, there, you have to have it all. You can't... Every human brain has it all in it. Yes. And so we need a way to express it in different ways. Some people do it through sports. Some people do it through art. Some through music. But if they don't have a place to express it, there's going to be problems, because
right,
there's too much pressure in the adolescent world.
Well, it's that's going to be our next girlfriend conversation.
Oh, wonderful.
We're going to come back, because I think there is so much to talk about the stress and pressure, and you're both involved in education. But for the art piece, I think giving them this place to get rid of those darker feelings makes room for them to still feel okay in their lives. And I think, you know, we understand that our children need it, but I think we forget how much we need it as adults, that this does not stop once we're 25, 27. You know, we tend to get busy with our lives, and unless you're someone like Brian or like you, Jennifer, who've made it your professional career during that time, people let their art self go and get focused on the busyness of life, and then they lose the therapeutic benefits, right? If we're going to go for a jog every day because we want our heart to be healthy, we need to spend time with art of some kind every day so that our mind can be healthy, so we can reduce stress, so we can reduce anxiety, so we can deal with the feelings and emotions and move on. And so this is a perfect opportunity for you, Terry, to tell everyone about the therapeutic art classes you're going to do this summer.
Yeah. We have a program where many of the ladies who've come to me after we've had a ladies' night and seen some of the pictures on the web or some of the photos that we've taken of the finished products come and they'll pull me aside and say, I'm not capable of doing that. It looks really fun. And man, are they really fun. Mm-hmm. But they feel because they lack a skill level that they can't. That's like competition or that the end project is really what's the matter, what's important in this process. And so what I say back to them is come one night a week, all of us, because I'm still learning too. Like I've never been a visual artist. I've always been, you know, a writer or whatever, and a performing artist. But this is a way that we can get over the hump of the outcome.
Right, the judgment we have of ourselves that there is a perfect, and if we're not perfect, we shouldn't participate.
No, absolutely. And I try and put that in our website and a lot of our social media. There are several groups called Pin Tester and these certain websites that make fun of the perfect Pinterest, you know, Martha Stewart kind of life. And these ladies just do it all wrong. And I want them, I want people to see that it's not perfect. It evolves over time and you are attracted to things and you have skill in things and that you don't even know you have unless you try. And I think that's my personality in all of this is I don't consider myself such an artist, but I'm like the community organizer.
Yeah, sure.
And I just want people to feel comfortable coming in and just trying it and saying, wow, I couldn't do that at all. So
what you had talked about earlier was that it's not really about the project anyway. It's about the process of allowing yourself to kind of get lost in the project.
Absolutely.
And whether you end up throwing it away because you're like, wasn't that great. It was the whole choosing materials and working materials and getting lost in our...
Being spontaneous.
Yes. And so to get away from that. So tell everyone how they can come be a part of... The Smart Studio in San Luis Obispo.
The best thing to do is to look at our website, smartstudioslo.com. On there is our calendar, all our programs listing, and you can find for yourself with some of the descriptions what might be the best place and time for you to land. Always give us a call or an email, though, with suggestions or questions because I'm always there. And like I said, I just want people to feel alive.
And what is this summer programs that people can do?
Summer programs were open... 5 or 6 days a week now, including both weekend days for open studio. And then we will have our art therapy program for people who are reluctant artists, our ladies' night, and some children's programs.
Jennifer, you're going to have to come a reluctant artist with me because my hands are sweaty.
Oh, absolutely.
Thinking about coming in and making something with Terry. I'll take my daughter and watch her make things. But as soon as you started putting the challenge out there, it's like, it's not about the project, it's the process. I thought, oh my gosh, I need to take it on. My hands are sweaty.
Well, I'd love to give some homework to your listeners tonight.
Please do.
On spontaneity and art and music. I'd like you to ask your children if they were going to a dance this weekend, what song would they dance to? What would be their favorite song? And then have them put it on and let's either do the dishes, cook dinner, or dance around the room to it. Because that is when it is fun and you're not embarrassed because no one's watching but just your family. And that's a great way to engage with your children.
I love that homework. And it's a very simple task that can have huge therapeutic benefits. And I think it's a great way to wrap things up today with a conversation with a reluctant therapist and her girlfriends, Terry Kurcheski and Jennifer Blomfield. I really appreciate you girls coming in. And this is going to be the beginning, I think, of a few conversations. And we've been talking about art and how you can engage with yourself and with your family, and that we don't need to hand our mental health over to experts to take care of what's important. We can do it in our own homes by talking to our children about the pictures they've made. You know, don't say, I like your picture. To ask your child, what is this picture and what does it mean to you and how do you feel about it? And that's going to really have strong therapeutic benefits for your child in the long run because art isn't about judgment. It's about experience. So I thank you for listening. Please join us on our Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist, or send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Brian, I'll look forward to seeing you next Tuesday.
See you next week.
And thank you for listening and supporting Public Radio KCBX.